My guest at this time is Charles Murray. He's the W.H. Brady Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and author of several high-profile books, including Losing Ground and Coming Apart. His new book is By the People, Rebuilding Liberty Without Permission. His premise is that the United States is in desperate need of reform and our current system is too dysfunctional to fix it. He says that means it's up to us to save our own nation. And Charles, thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Greg.
The first 100 pages of this book are pretty darn depressing. They explain why
our
Constitution, our courts, our legal and political systems, regulatory system are beyond repair and cannot get our nation back on the course that it needs to be on. That's a pretty major assertion. Why do you believe our most important institutions are essentially beyond hope at this point?
Well, that's what takes me 100 pages to explain, but the reason I felt I had to do it, Greg, is that I'm going to be advocating later in the book systematic civil disobedience, and that's a pretty big deal, because the rule of law is the foundation of civilization, and you don't just casually say, I'm going to ignore some of the laws. So I tried to lay that foundation where I was saying, look, we cannot expect the political process to alter any of this, and here are the reasons A, B, C, and D, where the system is paralyzed in ways that are not going to be fixed by electing the right Congress, by getting the right five people on the Supreme Court, or for that matter, by electing the right president. The regulatory state, which is my target for this, is largely beyond the reach of any of those branches of government. That's not a wild-eyed statement. It's pretty much a matter-of-fact statement of the way the regulatory state functions.
Charles, obviously, as you explain in the book, our founders explain and expected everything to be in a limited government format. You explain that certain changes did need to be made as we move from an agrarian to an industrial society. But over time, of course, government grew and our different systems became more and more unwieldy. Do you have a particular tipping point in mind, whether it's on the regulatory state, on our political system, on even the power of the Constitution, at which we hit a point of no return?
Actually, it all happened in a period of about 5 years, from 1937 to 1943, where you had half a dozen key Supreme Court cases which very explicitly said, we are now going to adopt a new interpretation of what the text of the Constitution means, and this new interpretation unleashes the government from the strict limits that the Constitution previously put on them. And one of the key ones, Greg, was in 1943, in a decision most people don't know about, where the Supreme Court said it's okay for Congress to write legislation that has a high-minded purpose and vague words for saying what that purpose is, and then leave it up to the regulatory agency to develop regulations independently of any further legislative guidance on how to implement this high-minded objective. That was a big change. Before that time, legislation had to spell out what the Supreme Court called an intelligible principle, so that the regulatory agency had very strict limits within which it had freedom to operate. That went away. So that was the moment at which the regulatory state basically got its Declaration of Independence. Took a couple of decades for it to take off, but that's where it started.
We're talking with Charles Murray. The book is By the People, and Charles, you alluded to this in your opening response, and your solution to this is through organized civil disobedience, particularly with a focus on trying to roll back the regulatory state. You explain in the book there are certain things that civil disobedience does not allow you to do, but other things that it does allow you to do, both in terms of pragmatism and in principle. For those who are generally familiar with the concept, what can you do in terms of civil disobedience, and what's off limits?
Well, the first thing to point out is some regulation is appropriate and necessary. I'm happy to see regulations of coal mines so that the tunnels miners go into are safe and are not going to collapse, and a variety of other regulations I have no intention of asking people to ignore. I'm really focused on the regulations that get in the way of ordinary Americans, small business people, homeowners, community groups, which get in the way of them living their lives as they see fit, providing goods and services, solving community problems in the ways that are just essential to our civic culture, and which we now have reached the situation people doing these things are suddenly told, oh, you're breaking the law. You can't do that. You owe us a fine. You cannot organize this little playground that you want in your neighborhood. You can't provide your service that your business provides in the way you want to provide it. I'm not worried about big corporations. I'm not worried about grand themes. I want to lift the burden of these pointless, picayune regulations from ordinary Americans. And to do that, I think what we need is a large legal defense fund that comes to their aid.
It's the no harm, no foul principle, and the fund you talk about in the book that you would propose, you gave the name the Madison Fund, obviously of the father of the Constitution. You said we need a large-scale movement here. How big does it need to be, and how do you organize something like that?
Well, let's talk about the Madison Fund, which would be philanthropic. It ought to be a couple of $100 million big. It needs some deep pockets because its strategy is as follows. You have an ordinary person who has run afoul of the regulatory system. They are technically guilty of a regulation. The regulation is really silly, but they're technically guilty. But the Madison Fund says to the bureaucracy, we are taking this person's case. We are going to litigate it to the max, even though technically the person violated this regulation, and we're going to make your life miserable. We are going to drag out the litigation as long as we can, and when you finally find the person guilty and levy a fine, we're going to reimburse the fine. If you have a fund that continually does that, and does that with a lot of cases, hundreds, maybe even thousands of cases, it's not very long before, if you're a bureaucrat in a regulatory agency, and somebody has violated a regulation that did no harm to anybody, and then you are told the Madison Fund is taking that case, you have to say to yourself, do we really want to go through with this, or should we maybe focus our attention on regulations where real harm is done when they're violated? So you mentioned the no harm, no foul rule. That's what I want. We can't get the regulations off the books. That'll never happen. But we can force the regulatory agencies to do what they do in professional basketball when they referee the game. They don't go after something unless it has affected the play. They only look for real harms that have been done, not a technical violation of a silly regulation.
Charles, do you need a swelling of grassroots support for this, or do you simply need enough cases to make the government's life miserable? We saw something like the Tea Party movement, which obviously is a very different type of thing, but it was grassroots. It had a lot of different moving parts that weren't necessarily always moving in the same direction, and some say it accomplished something, but not nearly enough. Others say it's petered out to some extent. So how much attention, how much involvement do you need from the general public, in addition perhaps to those who are actually involved in the litigation?
Oh, the publicity is a key component of the whole thing. Each of these cases should be publicized as much as possible, which means here's the criterion. You don't take a case if you're the Madison Fund unless you are confident that that publicity will get the overwhelming support of the American people. So that whether they are moderate Democrats or moderate Republicans, when they read about that case, they will say, I'm on the side of the citizen that the government's going after. So that means that you don't select regulations that are highly controversial and a lot of people really firmly believe in those regulations. You go after the ones that are really stupid. That's the best way of putting it.
Charles, obviously we refer to the first 100 pages of the book. There's a lot of things that, in your opinion and the opinion of many Americans, have devolved in this country. Even if you're successful in rolling back some of the most ridiculous parts of the regulatory state, there's still a lot of problems out there. So how does this movement move into some of those areas eventually?
Well, Greg, I submit that if we could simply succeed in the immediate objective of lifting the burden of a lot of the silly regulations, that's accomplishing a lot. For the last part of the book, I do indeed refer to some other favorable conditions where larger changes become possible. And I use as an example of how technology is feeding into this, I use the example of Uber. Throughout the country, you have city councils and taxi companies that have formed monopolies and that have impeded good taxi service in most cases. And people have said, oh, well, you can't get rid of it. It's just embedded in the system. Uber doesn't ask for permission. Uber just moves into town and starts operating, and by the time the politicians and the taxi company can try to strike back, Uber is already so popular that there's a political price to be paid for shutting it down, and Uber has really deep pockets. So if you go after Uber, if you're a city council, you can expect real pushback. Uber is just the leading edge of a wide variety of things that are enabled by new technology that provide superior services that work around the government. I have no hope of making our government responsive and trim and flexible. It's not going to happen. I do have a lot of hope. The government is going to become increasingly irrelevant to our lives.
Charles, last question. There may be some folks who have read some of the book or some folks who are just listening to this concept for the first time, and they may be wondering, is Charles Murray saying that this would be a great idea and I hope somebody pursues it, or are you launching this campaign right now saying, let's do this Madison Fund, I'm in charge, and let's do this together?
Greg, I write books. I don't run funds. I really hope somebody picks up the ball, but I'm old enough to be quite confident that I know what I can do and what I can't do. And being a manager of a big fund is one of the things I can't do.
Well, it's certainly food for tremendous thought for a lot of people very frustrated with the way the system and our government and our regulatory state look right now. Thank you, Charles, very much for your time today.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Charles Murray is the W.H. Brady Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He's the author of many successful high-profile books over the years. His latest work is By the People, Rebuilding Liberty Without Permission. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.